drunk drivers. Every day they kill more of our kids. Alcohol, it's the tolerated drug. Alcohol abuse is costing our society billions in lost productivity, lost relationships, and lost lives. Forget those alluring TV commercials and slick magazine ads. Today, you're going to hear the truth about alcoholism. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Our current series tells about seven secret snares that can trap the Christian. Today, Dr. Lutzer turns our attention to snare number three, alcoholism, quitting tomorrow.
There is a story about a man who would enter into the bar and always buy four drinks. In fact, he did it ritualistically. The bartender asked him why, and he said the reason is because I have three brothers in Europe, and we agreed that whenever we go into the bar, we would drink one glass of beer for one another. So this went on some time, and then the man came into the bar one day and ordered only three drinks. And the bartender, being very sensitive, assumed, of course, that one of the brothers had died. So he went over to ask the man about his family and ask whether one of his brothers had passed away. The man said no. He said, but I've just decided to order three drinks because I've quit drinking. Now, we smile at the story, but if you know anything about alcoholism, you know that there is nothing really to smile about, is there? Everyone who is listening to this message knows people whose lives have been totally destroyed by that curse, the curse of alcoholism. I do not have to detail for you, do I, the effect that it has had on people. The number of lives that have been lost, the crimes that have been committed, the traffic accidents that have taken place, and the number of families that have been smashed because of alcoholism. What I'd like to do is to begin by giving you some myths that need to be exploded about alcoholism. First of all, first myth, that addiction is limited only to some kinds of people. On the news, there are from time to time studies being done to show that alcoholism is genetically communicated. There is a disposition toward alcohol if you have parents that have been alcoholics, or perhaps because of the genes that have been passed on to you. There could be some truth to that. For example, it's been noticed that twins, if they are adopted in families, where their biological parents are alcoholics, but perhaps even adopted from birth and put into other families where there is no drinking, still have a propensity to alcohol. So that could be part of the story. But that's only a part of the story. The other part is that if you were brought up in a home where there was abuse and where there was a lot of shame and where there was a code of silence regarding the chaos that existed in that home, you would have a greater tendency to resort to alcoholism or drugs or some kind of substance in order to cover the pain and in order to cope with life as you saw it in all of that chaos. But there's still another part of the story, and that is simply that any one of us, even those of us who grew up with good homes, even those of us who do not have the genetic disposition to addiction, we could become addicts too. If we are social drinkers, it could well be that we might get to love alcohol much more than we should. In fact, there are people who for years have lived without any kind of addiction, but they have had casual social drinking, and in the end, when difficulties come, have ended up as alcoholics, because anyone can be an alcoholic. And that's why my first myth is simply this, that it happens to other people and could never happen to us. Yes, it could happen to you, and it could happen to me. That's why abstinence is usually the best policy. And there's no room for self-righteousness here. There's no room for condemnation or for looking down on others, because when we see their troubles and their addictions, we can say, indeed, that could be me. It could be me. Let me give you a second myth. The second myth is that alcoholics, those people who are addicts, they end up on Skid Row. They are the people who stop us on the street and ask for a quarter or for a cup of coffee, hoping that we'll give them some money that they can use for drink. Actually, the fact is that maybe only 3 or 4% of all those who are alcoholics actually end up homeless somewhere on State Street or in some of the other parts of the city of Chicago. Fact is that there are doctors who are alcoholics, attorneys, bankers, ministers, all walks of life. And many of these people get up in the morning, they do a day's work, and no one even knows their secret addiction, and they're able to function in society quite well. Many years ago, I was preaching somewhere, and the children of a rather well-known Christian leader came to me and said, "You know, Dad is an alcoholic." Now, here's a man who teaches the Word of God and counsels people and helps them and even leads people to Christ. But he would come home, the children said, and every evening after dinner he would have to have his drink, and he would basically get drunk, sleep it off, go to work the next day, come back and do the very same thing. And no one except this family knew, and he was terrified that anyone else would find out lest his reputation be ruined. I've talked to students at our universities, and they say that although they may be sober during the week, they not only get drunk on weekends, but maybe on weekends, in addition to that, they may actually take drugs. And so they might be on this high on the weekend, and oh, how long it seems before the weekend comes. But they're managing. They're even passing. They're getting through somehow, maybe muddling through, but they're doing it. So don't ever think that the alcoholics are some people who are out there. They are here. They are among us. They are a part of our homes, a part of our society, a part of our churches. So let's open our eyes and be realistic about this. Some of you know that this happens to be a series of messages titled Seven Secret Snares. And today we do talk about alcoholism. Next week it's pornography. We discussed gambling the last time. What are those snares that we can fall into where we can really become hooked? Snares that can so cripple our lives and not only ruin our lives, but ruin the lives of those who have to live with us. Well, today we're talking about alcoholism. Addiction, according to John Bradshaw, is a pathological relationship to any mood-altering experience that has life-damaging consequences. I gave you a different definition last time, but here's another, as I mentioned, a pathological relationship to a mood-altering experience, and you need it to get through. I'm going to spend a few moments this morning before we do get to the Word of God, and we shall, because we shall end up with hope, I can assure you. But before we do that, I want to point out that addiction is something that is possible for all of us simply because it is a way that people have found to, number one, receive some pleasure in life, and two, avoid pain. But also I'd like to take a few moments to give you what we could call the path of addiction. I've labeled it five steps, but actually these are not steps in the sense that they take place sequentially. They could happen in random order, or they could happen basically all the same time, but here they are. Because the better we understand addiction, the better you understand your father or your relative or your friends who may have a problem with alcoholism, the better it will be to be able to see what the cure really is. So that's our agenda. First of all, there is what we could call the experimentation of substance, that experimentation that brings that mood change that we talked about last week. That sense of euphoria, the belief that a whole new world has been created because of drugs and alcohol. And you're in this world which is kind of detached from reality, but it is a world with pleasurable sensations, a world in which you feel much better. And when you create that world, your goal is to go between that world and the real world in such a way that nobody even knows that you're going from one to the other. And oftentimes those who create these worlds, they remember exactly the first time they had that first drink that sent them into that high, or had that first crack cocaine which gave them that lift and that zest and that feeling of euphoria and almost a trance. They remember it exactly because it had such a great impression upon their lives. As a matter of fact, those who find these addictions so attractive discover that the hours that you have to live until you enter into that world again sometimes go along so slowly. If you do it on the weekends, Monday seems like an eternity away from Friday, and Monday goes so slow, and Tuesday goes so slow, and Wednesday goes so slow that you can hardly stand it. But thank God the weekend will come, but your being is fixed upon that time when you will be able to change your mood again and enter into that private world. Let me give you a second way to describe it, a second step. There is transference then of faith to the substance. Now let's just get into the mind of an addict here for a moment. People have disappointed him. His family has disappointed him. His employer has disappointed him. And God has disappointed him. Where is God in the midst of all this? I cried to him, I asked him for help, and nothing happened. But I found something that I can depend upon. Something, and that is that precious bottle. It will be there when I need it. The drugs will be there when I need them. In fact, I'm going to make sure that they're going to be there. And that's why you begin to figure out how to get the money, because now you have finally something that you can depend on. You'll be able to escape, get out of your reality with all of its difficulties, and you'll be able to go into that private world whenever you like.
Oh, my dear friend, I've been trying to describe for you what it's like to live in the world of an addict. I thank God that I was brought up in a Christian home and that my parents loved Jesus, and where there were no addictions and there were no family secrets. But as a pastor throughout the years, I've counseled many, many people who cannot say that. Some of you have been brought up in homes where there was a code of silence, where it was so important to maintain those secrets of addiction. And along with that, as we shall see, a tremendous amount of shame has settled upon your soul. I'm asking you today to come out from under that cloud, to simply recognize that you need to go for help. You need to talk to somebody you can trust. Somehow, your past and what has been happening in your life or the life of a loved one needs to be exposed. Because remember, as Jesus emphasized, it is the truth that indeed does set us free. Well, tomorrow we're going to continue talking about alcoholism. I hope that you tune in, because remember, from my heart to yours, our desire is to bring you help.
That was Dr. Erwin Lutzer with part one of Alcoholism, Quitting Tomorrow, the fourth message in a series on seven secret snares. Tomorrow, more insights on the travesty of alcohol addiction and how to get free. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. This series can be yours in the book Seven Snares of the Enemy by Dr. Lutzer. Your copy will be sent as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11-174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.